I'm Susan from Crossroads Cafe and Rock and Roll Radio, and today I have the great honor of speaking to the Bard of Barking, Mr. Billy Bragg, ahead of his performance this Friday, the 10th of June, at Big Top Chautauqua. Billy, it is a delight to speak with you, and I again want to first say congratulations to England on that win over Mexico the other night.
Thank you very much, Susan. Thank you. It was a bit tough for me. I was on stage at a show in Kingston, Ontario for most of the game because I thought I would be going on stage around half time, but of course they postponed the game for an hour. It was thunderstorms. So in the end,
right,
I kind of dashed into the dressing room and switched on the computer and saw the nail-biting last 20 minutes. But yeah, what a win.
That was wonderful.
And commiserations to Team USA. But I think they did really well to get out of the group and then get to the round of 16. Really well done.
Thank you for that. And honestly, I will take a noble defeat over a tainted win anytime.
Yeah, I get that.
That's
I
just
get
me.
That. Fair enough.
And yeah. As I said before, yeah, if we do continue on this line of conversation, I will totally out myself as a soccer noob.
Well, maybe we should talk about music.
Let's do that, shall we? You are over here in North America. You pretty much built this tour around the Solid Sound Festival that Wilco put together in North Adams, Massachusetts, where you premiered, or finally, you actually played the entire Mermaid Avenue. And so I'd like to know, what took so long? It's been 28 years.
Well, when we finished the album in late 1998, Wilco had already moved on to the recording and promotion of Summer Teeth, their seminal album where they stepped away from alt country.
Yeah.
So they weren't really able to come out and promote the record with me, which I think is fair enough. They were just in a different cycle. And this was really a side project. So we never really did that tour. But recently, when I've been playing on festivals and Wilco on the bill, Jeff Tweedy has invited me up to sing California Stars. And we've been talking about me coming to Solid Sound to do this for a while. But unfortunately, Solid Sound is once every 2 years, but also it's always on the same weekend as Glastonbury Festival. And I run a stage at Glastonbury Festival.
Right.
We curate, me and my partner curate. So I kind of have to be there. But this year, the festival is having a fallow year to let the grass grow and the cows moo. So, I suddenly came up. So I got onto Jeff and said, look, you know, if you're on this year, let's do it. And happily they were.
Brilliant. Wow. And yeah, I actually got to hear the audio of that and it was absolutely stellar.
A lot of fun.
It's tear jerking. So now in the kind of family tree of folk or folk consciousness or whatever, you know, it seems like Woody is the roots and then Bob Dylan and then not long after that, music of folks, of popular consciousness, branches off kind of into hip-hop and punk and insurgent country. And you didn't follow any of those clear paths. So, who or what were you inspired by? And what were you listening to at the time?
Well, I was initially, as a 12 or 13 years old, I did get into Bob Dylan. I listened to the soul music of the civil rights era. We're in the mid 70s now. So it was a decade after it had been made, but it really inspired me with its politics. Then when punk happened, I was a little punk rocker. But what happened was I kind of doubled back to that singer-songwriter thing in the early 80s and really found a way to make my words connect with people in that sense. So I kind of do feel I'm connected to that chain that you mentioned, of which Woody is the big copper spike that earths it into the ground. So I feel the Clash were part of that, and I feel some of the hip hoppers too were part of that. It's about communication of ideas rather than just about entertaining people and selling records. So that's part of it as well.
Right, absolutely. And I mean, John Graham Mellor went by Woody before he decided he was going to be Joe Strummer. So that was
struggling
his consciousness. And, you are you are my evidence when I argue that Woody was the godfather of punk.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
You totally
definitely.
Went, you know, brought it back, did your own thing, you know, created yeah. something where you saw it needed to be created. And now I recall you were, I don't know, lit up by Rock Against Racism, by the Rock Against Racism tour at the time, right? And I, you know, my husband saw that tour here and was absolutely blown away by it. And I, you know, the kids seem to be fired up and motivated, and they have so many good reasons to be. And do you think that something like Rock Against Racism would have, you know, would be a thing that could happen, or has just, you know, kind of the music industrial complex made that, really limited that and just kind of made it a beautiful pipe dream?
It's not just the music industrial complex. I think the digitization of culture has kind of deprived music of its vanguard role in youth culture. I mean, back in the day, you know, I when I wanted to say something about the world, the only medium available to me was to learn to play the guitar, write songs, and do gigs. There was no other way I could get my voice heard.
Right.
And even then, it was only by my own peers, really. Now, if you're angry about something, you can, not only can you use social media, you can make a film on your smartphone. So I think music no longer has that, you know, everything has to channel through this. So there are people out there who are fighting against racism, but it won't necessarily manifest itself exclusively through music. Music has a role to play. Music does, you know, it's capable. Although it can't change the world, music, it can make you believe the world can be changed. So it still has a role, but I think, you know, lots of people are using lots of different methods now to challenge the status quo, to challenge racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia. So it's they're still radical, our young people. It's just not all channeled through music.
Wow, you give me a lot of hope in that. Because, yeah, I see so much fragmentation and siloing, you know, when we're all staring at our own personally curated worlds. That's
also
a good way to
think about that. The thing about that, Sue, is it allows everybody access. You know, it's not easy to stand up on a table in a room full of strangers and sing a song to them that they've never heard.
Right.
That's a high bar, particularly if you're a woman. So the internet allows you to express your view in whatever terms you want to. So it's more accessible, but you're right, it is more fragmented. It's harder to find a focus.
Yeah.
But it's much more accessible than it was.
Yeah. Wow. Cool. Thank you. I admire that. I don't see that clearly enough, and I thank you for showing me that.
Yeah.
So now, obviously in the U.S., protest music is coming back around in a big way to, like, its folk foundations. Carsey Blanton and Margo Price are blowing up. Jesse Wells is blowing up. Is there an analog to that in the U.K.? Is there a similar kind of return to roots such as they are in the U.K.?
I do hear voices out there, but it doesn't have, they've not had the cut through that someone like Jesse Wells has or Carsey has. But they are out there. There are people out there making music. They're just a little bit more difficult for them to find a platform.
Sweet. Yeah, who are you kind of championing or listening to these days?
Well, I did do some shows with Carsey in Canada, actually. I think she's brilliant.
Cool.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yes.
And yeah. And it's kind of, you know, the music that, you know, I'm listening to is, you know, I listen to a lot of singer-songwriter stuff. So Gregory Alan Isaacov, I really like. I think he's actually from South Africa originally, but I think he lives in America now.
Mm.
So yeah, you know, these kind of artists I'm into.
Cool. Okay. Say, back in around 2009, you rewrote the lyrics to Ode to Joy, and you are one of the masters of rewrites. I love
Thank
it.
You.
I love the things that you hear in a song and the things that you add to it. And you were able to perform your rendition of Ode to Joy with the London Symphony Orchestra. And unfortunately, I don't think any recording of that exists. Or if there is, it's buried.
You might be able to find something on YouTube, maybe, but it's illegal, so
yeah.
I don't think you can broadcast it, but it's certainly on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, I just looked for it for my own gratification, and I could not find that. But
yeah.
Can you tell me how that came about? How you ended up
Yeah, sure. I was taking part in a ceremony to reopen the Royal Festival Hall in London, and the Ode to Joy was going to be the theme tune of it, and they were performing it in different places around the building, and I was doing something called the bus, which is where we invite people to bring on instruments and we play some busking songs together. It's usually about 500, 600 people, and I kind of lead them through, me and Bobby McGee and stuff like that.
Wow.
And I just said, "Oh, you know what? I'll do a version of the Ode to Joy in the big busk, if you like, to keep in with the theme of it. But I'll have to write some new lyrics because I'm not singing that nonsense about the Daughters of Elysium."
Right.
And then a woman who was doing the same thing with school kids from the borough of Southwark, where the building is, said, "If you do write some lyrics, could you let me have them? Because the school kids are having trouble with those as well." I said, "Oh yeah, no worries." So I wrote something on the way home on the train, sent them to her, and then a couple of days later, they rang me up and said, "You know, we're doing it with the London Symphony Orchestra at the end. We're inviting 900 choristers from Britain to stand in the stalls, in the seats, while the orchestra plays, to sing the Ode to Joy to close it. Would you mind if we use your lyrics?"
Huh.
I said, "No, I don't mind at all. But we're going to need you to write another three verses and the choral part by Tuesday." So I was like, "Oh, okay." "In a royal gala opening with the Queen, would you like to come to that?" And in my job, there's not many things you can do that really impress your mum, but having the Queen at your gig is a really big one. So I took my mum along, and there it was. There was the Queen. We saw the Queen, and my mum loved it. She was very impressed, and I was as well, because they're singing my words to the Ode to Joy, and here's the Queen.
And
Yeah.
you were finally in a legitimate career at that point, according to your mom, right?
That's right. For my mum, yeah. If the Queen's at my gig, yeah. It's all kosher.
That's fair. I guess that's a good arrival point. Your latest work, I believe, your latest work came about as the result of the occupation of Minneapolis, the song City of Heroes. I just want to say for the listeners, the photo that accompanies this song when you find it online is absolutely brilliant. It's a picture of a dude in a parka because it's winter in Minneapolis, and he's holding a sign that says, "All your favorite bands hate fascism." Can you tell me how that song came to you? How what compelled you to write that, and how that amazing photo came to you, where you found that?
Yeah, a friend of mine sent me the photo. A friend of mine, Jim Walsh, who lives in Minneapolis, he sent me the photo. And I asked him if it was okay if I used it to go with the song. I was looking for an image. And obviously, coming as it did, literally, I wrote that song the day after Alex Pretty was murdered on the Sunday. I saw a friend of mine talking about the murder and how the imagery evoked in his mind the story that his mother had told him about how his grandfather had been beaten to death by the SS in the Warsaw Ghetto for going to help a pregnant woman who'd stumbled over. And I was so moved by both his testimony and what had happened in Minneapolis that I sat down to write a song, because I think the difference between what happened to my friend's grandfather and what happened in Minneapolis is the people in Minneapolis, nobody stepped up to help my friend's grandfather. People in Warsaw
Man.
either couldn't or didn't step in and say, "No, we're not having this. This is not acceptable." In Minneapolis, the people did. They did step up. Renee stepped up. Alex stepped up. And I think those people needed to be seen. Because
Absolutely.
not only by those people, I don't mean the victims of ICE, Alex and Renee. I mean the people who were still going out the next day to put themselves between the perpetrator and the victim,
The people
because
who have to
that is
carry on.
how fascism is stopped. That is how fascism is stopped. Not by people like me singing songs about it, but by people going out in the streets and saying, "This will not happen in my city. This will not happen in my neighborhood. This will not happen in my country." And I think that needs to be recognized and saluted and respected. And that's what I was trying to do with that song, to send a message to those people to say, "You are seen, and what you are doing is inspirational."
Amen. You have long been a clear, brilliant voice for workers' rights, and you know, and many, many things. Where is your conscience leading you these days? You know, what's, how's that informing your?
How do I see it? Well, I'm always trying to make sense of the world. You know, that's all I've done in my music over time, whether it's writing about relationships, writing about politics, writing about whatever, football. And because we all see the same stars, you know, but it's how you join the dots between those stars that resonates with people. And my conclusion about what's happening at the moment, and it's clearly happening in the United States, but it's happening in my country as well, is that the idea of universal rights, which has existed since the Second World War, is being attacked by people who are really trying to maintain the dominance of white male heterosexual culture. Right. And what they're trying to do is replace the idea of universal human rights, which means every individual has rights that must be respected in every situation, no matter where they're from. No people are illegal. They're still people with rights. They're trying to push back those rights, take those rights away, and replace them with the idea that might is right. You know, and that's the idea that dominated before we had human rights. The idea that I can do this, I'm going to do this to you because I can. I'm going to enslave you because I can. I'm going to invade your country and take your resources because I can. But also that idea, might is right, it has implications for domestic relationships because, you know, the strongest partner in a relationship can use might is right to get their way. So that's how I see the world at the moment. And I'm trying to pitch my arguments in favor of things that undermine that idea of might is right. And the most powerful way of undermining it is to talk about empathy and compassion. And when you hear people like Elon Musk saying that empathy is toxic, I know what fight I'm involved in. It's not ideological at all. It's personal, it's emotional, and it's about caring for people. You know, are we part of a culture that in which people care, or are we part of a culture in which people bully? And I think the majority of people in the United States, as elsewhere, are part of that culture of caring. It's just, unfortunately, the bullies have the bullhorn. They have the bully pulpit. Right. They have, you know, X.
Right.
And we have to keep pushing back against that. So my job as I travel around is trying to make people believe the world can be changed. Because I believe that, because every night when I sing my songs, I see the way people react. And my activism gets recharged, you know, and my cynicism gets temporarily thrown in a dumpster. And that's what I'm trying to do with my songs and my raps, to send them out to people like your listeners, you know, just talking to you now. I want to send your listeners away thinking, yeah, I'm not alone. I'm not the only person who cares about this stuff. Obviously, at a gig, you get that stronger because you look around and everybody else is cheering and you know you're not alone. And that's the real power that music has. Make you feel you're not alone, whether you're heartbroken or whether you're politically wounded or whether you're just angry about the world. Music can make you feel that there are people out there like you, and it will come,
and that we might evolve rather than devolve.
We're evolving all the time, Sue. We're all evolving all the time. It's just sometimes the pendulum swings one way and swings the other way, and we just have to make sure we push it back. You know, a dear old friend of mine wrote a song a long time ago called All You Fascists Bound to Lose. And every time, every generation has defeated those people. Every generation has defeated those people. And I'm confident this generation will defeat them as well.
Thank you for your confidence. Last question that I ask everyone I interview, because it gives me kind of an understanding what the house is built out of, right? What was the first record you bought with your own money?
The first record I ever bought with my own money was You Were It by Rod Stewart, which was a single in 1972.
Dude.
I got a job in a hardware store, in a basement. It was old type of shops where they had two shops in one. And so I got my pay and I went down there, and I think it might have been in the charts at the time. Yeah, You Were It Well by Rod Stewart.
Brilliant. Awesome. Someday we'll have a talk about that record, because, but someday. Billy, I want to thank you ever so much for taking the time to speak to me and share with our listeners. Thank you so much. And again, Billy Bragg will be on stage at Big Top Chautauqua this Friday, the 10th of June, and tickets will be available at bigtop.org. Billy, thank you much, and go England.
My pleasure, Sue. Great to speak to you. Go England. Yeah, all the while. Thanks a lot. Great talking to you.
Lovely talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.